Welcome to the Bramblefang. I'm Iron Flying, the Bumble Guest, and joining me, as always, is the April Fool himself, Kajika P. Cruz.
I'm here to do the thing that happens on this day, usually every 2 weeks. It's what we do. This is not a joke.
Kyle, it's not a drill. Are you medicated?
I wish I was. Instead, why was that so funny?
That was the perfect response. What can I say?
Oh, well, no, actually, I'm just kind of sleepy. I just woke up, so I've been roused from my slumber, and I was hoping I would be less tired before.
Less tired. Seals have been broken.
Less tired after taking a short
the
rest.
The rites have been met. The Kyle has been awakened from his slumber to rise once more.
Yes, but I was hoping I would be less tired after taking a nap. Unfortunately, that has not worked.
I've been twice in my napping career.
It turns out I need a long rest, not a short rest this time. But we'll worry about that later, because we got some other stuff we got to do. So hopefully throughout the process of this episode, I will start to wake up gradually. It's kind of how it goes. How are you doing, Ian?
I'm Jim Crackin' Dandy. I've got projects lined up that I must do. But first, we must do the Bumblecast, which actually ties into another project that I'm slowly picking away at, which is the topic of the show, which is the next feature that we will be adding to the Bumblecast media empire thingy.
The slowly growing, the growing media empire, indeed.
More things for you people to be entertained with, we hope.
We hope? I don't know, man. It's a tall order.
Well, we've gotten this far with the podcast and the gaming channel. We might as well try.
Okay, what are we doing, Ian? What is it?
It's something we threatened you guys with a little while ago, and we're going to be launching the Bumble Quest, a kind of tabletop RPG roundtable thingy that we are slowly but surely cementing our plans on.
Indeed, we're kind of in the somewhat early stages of development on this thing, but it's going to be us and hopefully a couple of other friends getting together and entertaining you with adventures in space.
Now, part of what's been causing so many delays is Kyle and I discussed this, and we agreed that I would be the GM, the game master, for whatever it is we did.
Yes.
And
that seems that seems obvious to me, but I don't know.
You were pushing the game idea, so I didn't want to step on your toes, but I do have some experience, you know, crafting characters and storylines and doing goofy voices. So
a little bit, I suppose. you're definitely more experienced at it than I am, I think.
The problem is that is my day job, so
yeah.
Most of my time is devoted to doing that, which leaves me with very little time to do that for something else. So I've been trying to get my schedule worked out so that I can figure out when to sit down and do this. But part of that depends on the game module that we settle on. And Kyle, what did you pick out for us to play?
Well, we batted around several different ideas, some less rules heavy systems, some more rules heavy systems. And I think that the kind of the best one, the easiest one for ease of access and just, I think, giving more of a structure for you to work with, we ended up settling on the Pathfinder variant Starfinder.
Now, Pathfinder, as I found through research, is basically Dungeons & Dragons 3.5.
Correct. And that's the one system I personally have experience with previously. So I'm already kind of familiar with most of the rules that we're going to be encountering here, vaguely, more or less. So
and I have a passing understanding of D&D.
Yeah.
So I get the framework of what we're doing. Now, the reason we're going with Starfinder, though, is everybody and their brother is doing a yay old medieval fantasy campaign. There's a lot of great shows already out there. So we're doing the Starfinder path to be a little bit different, just a little different flavor. But that being said, I'm thinking we're going to be bending the rules a little bit and making it more science fantasy so that we can have some fun if we want to throw in, say, a dragon or some magic or something that isn't hard bound by make-believe physics.
I will say that there is a lot of that in the book already, so I don't think you have to worry too much, Ian.
As I've
gone through what's in the book, there's a lot of, you know, you can take pretty much Pathfinder and put it in space. That's what we're doing. That's what this is.
And once we get this up and running, don't expect it to be a by the book down to the letter, must observe every rule because that's how it's written, because that's not fun. I can't learn all those rules myself within a reasonable time frame. And one of the quickest ways to kill a game is to start arguing over semantics. So you can expect the rule set from Starfinder as the foundation. We'll definitely use it as the guidelines, but the rule of cool, the rule of fun, has to win out every time.
I was going to say, I think the first rule is going to be the rule of cool. It has to be. Because, I mean, it's a story you're telling, so it has to be cool, first and foremost. So, yes.
I'm just saying, you know, if somebody wants to have a trait that isn't necessarily rule-bound, or if they want to have something that would need a little extra effort, we can just let it happen, you know?
Oh, sure. And there are, in fact, there's a whole chapter in this book on how to bring things over from, like, standard Pathfinder over into Starfinder, so... There are some steps to follow that you can take to make it, you know, a little more balanced, I suppose.
I am behind you because I was reading up on Pathfinder first, because that's what we were looking at initially.
Yeah.
And kind of came to the decision of, we've got enough dudes slaying orcs and goblins, let's do something different. And you said, well, there's Starfinder. It's the space age version. That was exactly the tone of voice he used.
It was.
It was kind of hard to tell because it was all in text. But, you know, you can get the little subtle nuances here and there. Read enough interactions with people.
Yeah.
But I have yet to dive into that book so far. So, you know, baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby steps.
Well, as far as I can tell, you can play it more like Star Trek or you can play it more like Star Wars. Or you can play it anywhere in between or anywhere beyond. It's very kind of open-ended in that sense. So there are some very interesting races that you may or may not want in your game. I don't know if you want rat people. Rat people are pretty cool, but I mean, it's up to you if you want them there. It's also up to you if you want like the standard humanoid races from Pathfinder to be in this world, if you want elves and dwarves and half-elves and orcs and all that stuff. So there's a variety. There's very much a variety. There's androids. There's, of course, you got your standard humans. You gotta have your standard humans because, I don't know, you just do, I guess.
And so part of this
there's
will
a lot
depend
of,
on the...
there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and part of it will depend on what the players want to do, because I don't want to limit them. They're coming into the game with us. They may not be overly familiar with the module, so whatever they feel comfortable with, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, to get into kind of insight into how we're going to be playing the game, we thought it'd be kind of neat to give you and I a look at the characters, one of the characters that we will potentially be using, and by we, I mean Kyle. So, Kyle, who are you potentially going to be playing in the campaign?
I will be playing the Ace Pilot Operative Max, who's going to be kind of a stoic, badass, dual pistol wielding pilot who takes no crap from anybody, and just is, you know, overall just like really cool. And I'm going to try to be cool for the first time in my life, and it's going to be hard. So, you know, I guess like maybe think like, I don't know, Black Widow in space or Zoe from Firefly or something like that. That's like the best kind of
inspiration. Very different characters. So if you land somewhere in the middle, I think you'll be all right.
Well, yeah, I know there are different characters. Like the inspirations I've got, like Batwoman, Melinda May from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., stuff like that. It's you know, they're not the same characters, but the elements of them, I feel like I would be trying to mix in there. So, you know, they're all just kind of, they don't talk much. They let their fighting do the talking. So, and the shooting. I like the shooting. So that's what we're doing. I'm going to be shooting things. And just having a good time, flying around in cool spaceships and riding other vehicles and whatever you do in Starfinder. I don't even know what you do in Starfinder, Ian. This is going to be a learning experience for all of us.
We will, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say something glib, but it's like, I have no idea. I need to dive into the book. But you are like, you're doing something special for the video version of this episode where you're actually going to be showing us your character sheet.
Indeed. Thanks to user DarkMarth28 on the Starfinder subreddit, they put together a really, really nicely made character sheet that I am using that sort of automates most of the math and the all the numbers, and you just kind of plug stuff in where you want it, and it works out really well. So it took me a few hours to put this together because I had to read the book through the process as well. So it took me a long time, but I think I could do it a lot faster now that I know what I'm kind of know what I'm doing. So this is the preferred method for me. I prefer kind of having stuff that's more automated and I can just plug stuff in and have it go. If you want to do all the math yourself, there's certainly that option. You can use the standard character sheet that comes with the game. I'm okay with that method, but I kind of like just being able to just be like, all right, so here's my class, and then the sheet goes, okay, here's all the numbers related to that class. You're welcome. Don't worry about doing the math for anything. And it's like, great. Yes.
I like that.
Yes. I do appreciate that very much. So, this is a really nice sheet, by the way. It looks really good. So as we start at the top, you have your basic character information here. And, at the top corner, just below the logo. And you can see I have the Ace Pilot theme, which is sort of like a, you know, you're a cool pilot. It gives you bonuses to your piloting skill, which is down here. And a couple of other things as you go through and level up in the game. So down here we have our theme features, which we'll unlock as we're playing. But right now I start with a theme knowledge, which means that I just get it makes it easier for me to know like things about cool pilots or knowing things about starships or other vehicles. And then I get a bonus to my piloting skill.
So you're knowledgeable in your field in canon.
Right. Yeah. There will be a few more things that will come through thanks to that theme as well. More bonuses specifically to pilot roles and stuff. But for now, that's where we're starting. Since we're just... I just rolled this for level one. But it will be up to you, Ian, where you want to start. I think most of the time, starting at like level two or three is usually a good option. Just because level one, you really don't get a whole heck of a lot of health. And, like, at level two, you start unlocking stuff that's really useful. And it seems like it'd make more sense for a starter character to have, but...
The campaign I'm thinking of would have the party as semi-experienced and have it gone together and then quickly getting out of the element. So, yeah, maybe we'll have everyone start at 2 or 3 so that they have something to work with, but not something that they'd be able to get out of the first major scenario with no scars.
And maybe not so, like, just overbearing as starting at a later level with a with a character. Like, starting at 6, 7, 8. 7 wasn't so bad when I did it, but we started, there was a campaign I played where we started at, like, level 13. And that's when I played a sorcerer, and that was a little kind of a big jump, and was kind of surprising to me. Like, holy crap! I have a lot of
magical Rolodex.
I have a lot of things I can do, and I have no idea what they do. So
and that's when Kyle became chaotic neutral. Let's try this one.
I've been
try this one. Bang! Victory.
I've been chaotic neutral my whole life. Anyway. So up here, we have our basic statistics underneath the statistics column here. You got your strength, you got your dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. You can roll for these in the traditional sense where you take, I think it's 7 die, and then roll 7 d20s, and then drop the lowest score, and then plug them in wherever you want them to. You can do that. Or the way that Starfinder recommends is by using the point buy system, where you start with 10 in each 10 as a base level in each, and then adjust them from there using 10 more points. So you can put you start with 10 in each, and then you have a pool of 10 points that you can use to plug into each of these however you see fit, at least starting on level 1. As you level up, you'll gain more, and you'll be able to add more as you go along, but you can only max out, starting from level 1, you can only have up to 18 per stat, so... Since my key stat as an operative is dexterity, that's the one that most things key off of, and that's just the most important stat for an operative, which is kind of like a cool spy or rogue if you're looking for more of a... If you want sort of the a fantasy gaming equivalent, a rogue would be the closest. So dex would be the... key score, so that's the one where I went ahead and just maxed out the whole thing. Luckily, Ace Pilot works very well with Operative because you actually get a +1 bonus to your dexterity, and then you get a +2 bonus from a being human that you can add to any of these. Which, so since I am an operative, I went ahead and put the +2 bonus into dexterity. And then just used 5 more points to max it out completely. I went ahead and put the other points in Constitution and Intelligence. Intelligence is used quite a bit for operatives, too. So I added that in there. And Constitution is where your mainly controls how much health you have. So it's very important in that respect. So I went ahead and dropped a couple points in there to give me a bonus in Constitution as well. So I had a little bit more health. So it was a little bit more durable. So you never really want to let your Constitution linger too much. You want to keep that pumped up just so you don't die.
You mean you're saying you want to amend your constitution as soon as possible?
Exactly. Thank
you. Hey! Highbrow humor on this show, folks.
Very good. Very good. That's a timely reference. Or not. I'm not sure. So, as you can see over here under the modifier heading, this gives you your actual bonuses to these rolls. So, like, Ian, if you made me want to do a straight intelligence roll, I would take a d20, roll a d20, take what I get on that d20, and then add a plus one. So every 2 points in either direction from 10 either gives you a negative or positive one to your intelligence or to your statistic modifier. So that's kind of the basics of how that works. As we move over to vitals, health is determined by your class, the class that you are. So I believe operatives start out with 6. And then you can get health bonuses through extra feats or anything. Any other bonuses you might have. So I think I have a little bit of extra health. As you can see up here on the top where it says bonus stamina, health, bonus resolve, and skills, I have a plus 4 at first level for human race. So at first level, you get a plus 4 HP for being human, and then an extra 6 for being an operative. So that brings me up to 10. The stamina is kind of like a health pool. It's kind of like temporary hit points, but you always have them, and they're easier to recover than straight up health. So as we play through the game, we'll figure out more about how stamina works. And then resolve is kind of bonus points you can use to activate special features of your class. So this is not really health so much. It's kind of like, you know, your last ditch effort to do something really cool before you die or something like that. Initiative is the roll you make when battle begins. You start out with your dexterity. You take your dexterity score, and then I have an added additional 1 from a feature that operatives have called Operative's Edge. I believe every 3 levels they get a bonus from that, so this will go up over time, meaning my initiative will go up over time, meaning I'll be able to potentially start earlier and earlier in battles as time goes on. So initiative is just a bonus to your roll when you first start combat and where you'll be in combat order. So every character will make an initiative roll, and then that roll will determine what order they go in. And that includes the enemies too. So having a high initiative as a sneaky operative spy, kind of roguish type, is a good idea. As like a tank, it's a good idea. As a like maybe a magic user, maybe you don't want to go first. you know, you don't want to put yourself out there. You don't want to be on the front lines necessarily if you're like a magic user or something. That's
unless you got like a scary super high Blizzaga spell in your pocket and you're just like, yeah, boom, encounter over, you're welcome. I'll just take all that XP. Thank you. Why is everyone glaring at me?
If you're a good controller, you might want to go first so you can, you know, actually like take control of people and you know, like hold them down or, you know, make them stick to the ground using some grease or something. That's always cool.
But it just kind of depends. The line, though, so that you don't have like a conga line of goblins dancing on your face.
Right. Exactly. As funny as that would be. Next, we have skills. So this was the point where I was a little overwhelmed at first. Skills, I'm familiar with D&D 3.5, and the skills are mostly the same. There's a lot fewer skills. They've kind of condensed things down a bit, which is a good thing, because they had a lot of really redundant and stupid skills in D&D 3.5, like swim. Why is swim a thing?
you need to learn how to swim.
You need to waste points in swimming. Like, swimming hardly ever comes up in most normal D&D games.
which is why more DMs would need to put more water.
Which
hazards.
Is why more DMs would throw water at people, because they knew their characters, the player characters, weren't built for swimming, so they'd screw over the player characters by making them go in water and ruining the entire game.
That's they a have to go on a small sub quest where they have to go down to the watering hole. And all the 5-year-olds are pointing and laughing because here's this big, burly berserker who has to wear little water wings and learn how to doggy paddle just so he can get enough XP just so he can learn how to swim.
Well, they rolled swimming over into athletics, so we don't have to worry about that anymore, luckily. I'm very glad. I'm personally glad because, like,
I'm very much on the side of house rules. Let's simplify. But nah. Swimming is a skill. I struggled to learn how to swim. I appreciate the fact of how much I have forgotten over the years. Swimming is a skill, sir.
It is.
Good day.
It is. It's an athletic skill, though. It makes sense. It's fine. I definitely prefer it to where swim is not its own freaking skill, because I'm never going to put points in swim. I'm always putting points in other things that are more important. You only get 1 point.
I believe y'all are going to be crash landing on a water planet first thing.
Yeah, but you only get 1 point per level. It's like, what? Why would I waste time doing that? Jeez.
So you can swim. We're getting off topic. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's funny. That's why I went with swim, because it's funny. So I found out that you can only have, you get a certain amount of ranks that goes up as you level up. Ranks are basically points that you can put into these different skills. The ones marked with X over here on the side are class skills. So as you change your class, like if I wanted to be, say, like a, if I wanted to change over to a mystic, which I can do, you can see that the class skills change and they have different skills that they are more adept at being trained in. So, but as an operative, you get like a freaking boatload of skills that you can use. It's kind of ridiculous. I was like, holy crap, these are like, operatives are like the skills class, basically. They can just be really good at a whole bunch of skills. So, at level 1, you can start out with up to 12 ranks. I got some bonuses that I'll go over a little bit later that add more. But you start out with 12 ranks, and so you can only put as many ranks in each skill as the level you are. So I can only put, since I'm level 1, I can only put up to 1 rank in each of these skills. The thing is that as soon as you do put 1 rank in a skill, you are considered trained in that skill, which means you also get another 3 because of your class. So when you are trained in a skill, you get a +3 to your skills, to any skills that are a class skill. So, like, for example, operatives are naturally adept at, like, engineering, for example. So you put a 1 in there, and that will also add another 1 for your intelligence, because it's an intelligence, it's an intelligence-based skill. And so that will add your intelligence modifier to that. And then another 3 because you're an operative. And that's a class skill that operatives get. So you get +3 to that for that. So due to also being an operative, you get the special operative's edge skill, which lets you add 1 skill to any role, any skills role. So you get to add 1 to every skills roll you make. So basically you get 1 extra point in every skill because of that. You also get a bonus for like piloting. You get a bonus for being an ace pilot. So for theme knowledge, you get a +1 from that. And then in acrobatics and athletics, you get bonuses for your specialization. So at first level for an operative, you get to choose a specialization. And I went ahead and went with Daredevil, which basically means they're really good at acrobatic and athletics.
And echolocation.
Yes, yes, exactly. and then you get another plus three. You get a plus three for that specialization. And then you get an extra plus one per level from that specialization. So acrobatics and athletics will, as I level, will go up automatically plus one every time. It's kind of ridiculous.
You seem to have picked the broken class, but okay.
Well, for acrobatics and athletics, like, if you wanted me to, like, you know, do a medicinal, if you wanted me to try to heal somebody or figure out what's wrong with them when they're sick, that's bad. You don't want me to...
Okay, first mission on the water planet is stop a plague.
You don't want me to do that. But there will be there will hopefully be someone else in the party who is really good at doing medicine checks.
We'll see.
So that's where I would defer to, like, someone who's actually good at healing to do that. So at least I don't get a negative bonus to medicine checks for what that's worth. Alrighty. Over here on going back over to the left side, we have our defense and our saves and speed. Speed, you start out being able to move 30 feet every combat round. That will go up over time, especially as an operative where you can kind of go crazy with speed, apparently. So I'm looking forward to that. I always prefer fast characters who can, you know, crisscross the battlefield super fast. I have a good time with that. So, but you start out with a base speed of 30, which would be the equivalent of six squares, because every square is 5 foot by 5 foot. So as we play the game and you look at a character map or a combat map, you'll see kind of how things are laid out in grid form, and then you'll be able to see how 30 feet corresponds to 5x5 movement. Up above that, we have our my saves, which I have a fortitude, reflex, and will save. Reflex is basically just how well I'm able to get out of the way or how well I'm able to move into position. Will is sort of like your fortitude, or not, well, kind of, your ability to kind of shrug off magic attacks or to kind of just be able to overcome stuff magically. And fortitude is sort of being able to overcome stuff more traditionally, you know, like handling, like getting punched in the face and stuff. So each of these, you get kind of a base score from your class, and then you will add your ability stat modifiers to each one. And then there's also the ability to increase those through other feats that you can choose, or just over time those will go up. And then defense in Starfinder is split between two different types. You've got energy and kinetic. Energy is basically your energy weapon, like, say, lasers or plasma weapons. Your ability to withstand hits from those or to dodge out of the way of those, or what, however you want to flavor it, either way. And then you have kinetic AC, which is sort of, you know, getting hit with like a giant hammer or getting punched in the face. I talk about getting punched in the face a lot. It's a thing I have, Ian.
It is a chief concern of yours, I realize.
Well, I mean, getting punched in the face is kind of a big deal in video games and in tabletop games.
It is. So when you're trying to solve the plague on the water planet, you got to watch out for that ornery six-armed dude who has nothing but fists. He can't open his hands, and it makes him very angry.
There is a four-armed race, as in they have four arms.
Yeah, so this has six arms. Ashamed of his mutation.
You can just add
another reason he likes to beat up people.
You can just add a couple more. Yeah, that's fine. I'm just saying, there's precedent. You know, there's precedent for more arms than, you know, than standard. So AC would be armor class. So when somebody makes an attack against me, they would have to roll like a, if they made an energy attack against me, they would have to roll a 14 or higher to hit me. So you make an attack roll, and then if they got, say, a 14 or higher, then it would be considered a hit, and then they would get to roll their damage against me. And then that would determine how much damage I take, and that would be how much stamina and then health I would lose over time. So, well, not over time, but with that hit. Unless the effect that they're doing, that they caused, is an overtime thing, in which case every round I would take a certain amount of damage or whatever effect it causes each time. So, like, if I'm on fire, I'd, like, take 2 HP every time I get hit or something. Or every round of combat before the fire goes out. So, don't light me on fire, Ian. Don't throw acid on me.
Yeah.
It's very mean. It's very mean.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah, it's very mean. All right, below this, we have your offense. So we have a... I went ahead and rolled with dual pistols. Dual pistols is actually a little bit of a disadvantage in this game, sort of. If you only use one at a time, it's okay, but if you try to attack with both in one round, you get a disadvantage, so... you can take feats to kind of mitigate that, which I'm working on. So I'm deliberately kind of taking something that could potentially gimp me, but it's okay. It's okay. I'll make up for it.
Because if you can pull it off, it's going to be hella cool.
It's okay, because I'm going to make up for it. But yeah, having one pistol might be the smarter idea, but I don't play these games to do the smart thing, Ian. I play this game to do the fun things.
Exactly.
And this is the fun thing, so I'm going to do the fun thing. So I'm starting off with two semi-auto pistols, which use standard bullets. You can also get laser weapons and, shotguns and sniper rifles and... you can also use more traditional weapons like swords and giant hammers or axes and stuff like that. So there's really a ton of weapons. Actually, on the sheet, there's a weapons tab that gives you all of the stats and everything you need to know about each of these weapons. So you've got an acid lancer. So you have a big lance that you can poke into people that has acid on it, and that's pretty cool. There's all sorts of other stuff too. There's like tons of stuff. You can just have like a tactical baton that you just beat people over the head with. You can just beat them over the head with a baton. You can have a battle glove. So like you punch people in the face. That's what you do.
Now you're playing with power.
You can have a scimitar. You can have all sorts of cool stuff. It's neat. This game is neat, Ian. It's really cool. So that's kind of what's going on here. Luckily, this sheet, when you choose a weapon, you can just take it and you can choose it. You can type it in here and then it auto-populates everything else. So, but essentially, it comes with a standard clip of 9 bullets. And then I also went ahead and purchased an extra 30. You know, good to have some spares. I don't know how you get those back, if you can. I don't know how that regenerates. I'm guessing you just have to buy bullets every once in a while, which luckily...
Yeah, I figure once you head into town, if you've got enough...
Luckily aren't too expensive.
Crystals? Rupees?
Because this game is kind of blandian, they're called credits. Which is kind of...
House rules, we're going to be changing that.
That's fine. I don't blame you, because credits is so boring. It's so boring. It's more boring than, like, gold. At least gold has, like, a... There's something you can imagine to that. When it's just called credits, it's like, well, that's bland. So, that's fine. But you do have a credit card.
That's fine, because it's a card that gives you credit.
Right.
credits themselves.
But credit is a very boring term for currency. So yeah, I don't mind changing that. That would be fine. So when I do a damage roll, say I hit an enemy, I will do a damage roll of 1d6 with no bonus at first, but I believe over time that will go up, or with other weapons that will go up. So when I upgrade the pistol with other cool stuff, then it will have more options for, or better damage. It will have better damage. You can also have, like, grenades and smoke bombs and rocket launchers and all sorts of other crazy things. I haven't even gotten into, like, having a ship or anything, spacefaring stuff yet. This is just a character. I didn't even look into how to, like, build a... how to build a spaceship or even how space combat works yet. I have not looked into that, so... I'm pretty excited.
Episode in the future.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about and looking forward to that. But man, there's a lot to this freaking game, Ian. It's freaking deep. So as we scroll down, we can scroll down a bit to the equipment and features area of the spell sheet, or of the character sheet, not spell sheet. We can look and we can see the features I get for being human. So the default racial features you get are skilled, where you can add one skill rank at each level. So I get an extra bonus skill rank that I can drop into any of these skills up here at any level. Or at every level. I also get a bonus feat at level 1, so I can choose an extra feat, which is sort of like just a special ability that the book kind of lays out. You can choose different ones. And then, of course, I have my theme features for being an ace pilot. As we went over before, I have a theme knowledge, so I get a minus 5 DC to piloting culture checks. So basically, I just like know everything that there is to know about you know, cool pilots and cool starships and cool vehicles and everything like that. And then I get a plus 1 to my piloting skill, which I believe goes up over time. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. But as far as feats go, feats are like features, special abilities you can choose from. I have multi-weapon fighting to sort of mitigate the penalty I take to having dual pistols. So this gives me a plus 1 to the penalty I would normally take for full attack. So instead of a negative 4 to full attack penalty, it would be a negative 3. And then I also went ahead and took Iron Will to increase my will saves to plus 2 because, well, operatives don't really get a whole heck of a lot of will save to start with, so I'm kind of mitigating that. They also don't get a whole heck of a lot of fortitude, but that will be a future thing that I work on. So that's kind of a level 3 or beyond thing. As you can see, I have it labeled on the sheet to where the on the left side underneath the feats header, you can see what level more feats will open up at. So I have 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, basically the every odd number level I get a new feat. I get to pick a new feat. And then over here we have class features, which also open up at different levels throughout, going all the way up to 20. So, but to start with, I have Operative's Edge, which gives me a plus 1 to initiative checks, and then another plus 1 to every skill check. So basically, every skill gets an automatic extra rank, which is nice. I have my Daredevil specialization, which gives me a plus 3, plus 1 level in, or plus 1. Plus 3 to start, and then plus 1 per level in both acrobatics and athletics. And then I have a trick attack, which is Starfinder's equivalent of a stealth attack or sneak attack. So basically I'd be able to come up, you know, behind people or, you know, be able to kind of shoot them and have them not realize that I'm there. And then that gives me an extra bonus damage roll to that. So they get I get a little bit of extra damage for tricking them into thinking I'm not there or being hidden or whatever. And then over on the last side here under equipment, which is the last thing I'm going to go over because I don't have any spells as this class, would be items and armor. So right now I'm starting out with the basic Estec suit, which is sort of just, you know, your standard sort of space and combat suit that's in the game. It's just this general, you know, body stocking thing, I guess. Although there is an actual body stocking for, if you don't want people to know you have armor, then there is like a second skin, which is basically the same as the Estec suit, but it's just, you know, less obvious that you're wearing it. If you want it to be less obvious, like say you're an envoy, you don't want people to know you're wearing armor, going around wearing armor.
You expect to fight there, ambassador?
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, it's good to have a little bit of extra protection. So the Estec suit kind of gives you a little bit of a bonus to your kinetic AC. It doesn't really mitigate any energy, but it does affect your dexterity a bit. But other than that, it's really not a whole heck of a lot of protection. But at least it's something. You can actually install armor upgrades as well. This has two slots, as you can see under the slots area there. You have two slots where you can put armor upgrades so you can mitigate some of the effects of, like, say you don't necessarily like the fact that heavy armor makes you encumbered. You can sort of add in something to kind of make it lighter or easier or whatever. Or you can just, you know, make your armor cooler. I don't know. You can add flashy lights to it or something. I don't know what actual upgrades you can add to it. These are just examples I'm thinking of. But, you know, you got to...
colorful balloons are added to help the heavy armor be unencumbered.
Of course. We're house ruling that, Ian. We're house ruling that. That's what it's going
to
be.
You have to roll to see if you get the bunny-shaped one. But and otherwise, then, yeah, and it's then, easy to equip.
And then if you want your armor to have cool lights, it's the Tron upgrade. So it has, you know, yes, cool RGB lines and stuff in it.
Of course, if the balloons pop, you become encumbered again. So you got to be careful.
Right. It's like Mario Kart. All right. Other things I went with are kind of like basics. I think that would be a good for most characters to have items, general items. I have a comms unit, a personal comms unit, which is very handy, you know, in case you want to talk to people who are not in front of you. Good thing to have. A flashlight, I mean, good to have in a dark area. And then I went ahead and went with a toolkit. Specifically a toolkit to disable traps and stuff like that easier. So, because, you know, I'm playing kind of a rogue class, so it kind of makes sense to be able to, you know, search for and disable traps. And that's pretty much it. Down here we have the spellcasting section, which is not really related to my class and is a whole different beast. There's a lot going on with spells. Spells can be tough, but they can also be pretty interesting. So, but luckily, I don't really have to worry about those as an operative. Also, on this sheet, you can have a companion. So, like, if you have a dog or something that follows you around and is cool, or, you know, just a little like demon creature that follows you around, that happens sometimes. On this sheet, you also get how much money you start with in credits per level. So right here under the wealth calculator, you can actually take each of those items from the other areas in your sheet to put them on this list, and then you can determine how much, or it automatically determines how much each one is and sort of adds it all up for you, so you don't even really have to do a whole heck of a lot of the math to have the stuff, to carry stuff around. So that's really cool. And then you can actually customize the sheet even further to add more stuff to it that I'm not going to worry about right now. But so that's a character in Starfinder. You have any questions, Ian?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
A whole bunch. But I got to read the book, so that'll probably answer a few of them.
It might. It might. It answered quite a few of mine, and it definitely made this process a lot easier, but it took me about 4 hours to put this all together, so oof. It was interesting. It was fun, but man, I was like, oh boy, this is a little overwhelming at first, but once I figured it out, it's not so bad. So I'm looking forward
to... you get to the water planet that's full of plague and multi-fisted angry people.
That's okay.
That sets you on fire. Oh, what a fun campaign we shall have.
That's okay. I can just shoot them. That will be fun.
I have to put more thought into this.
I can shoot the plague, Ian. That's my solution to everything, is shooting it. I'm going to shoot the plague. I'm really looking forward to playing this. This is going to be a ton of fun. So, all right. Are we ready to move on to the Q&A, Ian?
Before this, we are ready to move on to the Q&A.
Before this episode gets too ginormous. All right. If you want to ask questions, you can email us, bumblecast@yahoo.com, at Twitter, @bumblecast, down in the YouTube comments if you're watching this on YouTube, or via Patreon comments or messages over at patreon.com/bumblecast. Speaking of patrons, we have good old Scruffy Matt bringing us in with the Patreon Q&A, because that's what he does. He's very diligent about asking his questions. I appreciate it.
He's a regular patron of the $5 mark, so he gets to ask his questions.
I appreciate it. And he asks some good questions, and, you know, he doesn't just go in and like, hey, how old is Sonic? How old is Sonic, Ian? Is he still 15?
I believe so. I haven't seen any change on it.
Wow, is he ever going to have a birthday? I mean, he had one in Sonic Generations. You'd think he'd be 16 now, but no, I guess not.
And it's been 6 months since his incarceration, so if there's, depending on the amount of time between that, never mind. What's the question from Scruffy?
I feel like he should be older. I don't know, 15 seems too young to me, but I don't know, maybe that's just me and... me being old.
Amy's technically 12 and she doesn't act 12.
No, so. She does not. No.
Like, the ages mean nothing.
Maybe it's just like animal ages, you know? Like how dogs...
15 in hedgehog years.
15 in hedgehog years, exactly. 15 in hedgehog years means he's probably closer to like 19 in human years. I don't know. All right, Scruffy Matt. Greetings, oh bumbly ones. A lot of popular video game characters have well-known idle animations where they'll start doing stuff if you put down the controller and not move them for a while. Two of the best are Sonic's impatience foot tapping and Mario's falling asleep and dreaming of spaghetti and ravioli. What are some of your favorite idle animations? I personally love Conker from Conker's Bad Fur Day. Leave him alone long enough, he'd pull out a Game Boy, a yo-yo, a hacky sack, or just yell at you to stop doing that, you'll go blind! Which is kind of funny.
Conker was full of all sorts of implications and things that were just overt. So,
yes, of course.
You know, I never really lingered long enough to get idle animations.
Yeah.
If I'm playing something, I'm going into it full tilt. That being said, I guess one of my favorites is Knuckles' shadow boxing, because not only was it his idle animation, but he would also be throwing up the fists when you went to fight him in Hidden Palace Zone. So it was a dual function animation.
Yeah, that's definitely a cool one. Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. I can't think of any immediately off the top of my head where I'm like, oh yeah, that's a cool idle animation. Other than like the iconic ones like Sonic and Mario, where it's like, oh yeah, of course. I know those. I do like Sonic running off the screen and causing a game over in Sonic CD. That's pretty funny. It's mean, but it's also funny.
Well, it's your fault if you let it happen.
Well, yeah, true. I can't think of characters with good idle animations off the top of my head. I don't know. Maybe the characters in Splatoon, they just kind of sit there and bounce. Do they do anything if they sit there for a long time? I've not tried.
I don't know. I did just think of, in Chaotix, though, Espeo hunkers down and starts cycling through the colors of the rainbow, and it's a really pretty gradient.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Oh, geez. I can't think of any. Man, I feel bad. Jeez. I'm just thinking of, like, the most popular, most common ones. Interestingly enough, though, Mario doesn't always have, like, an idle animation. Or, like, something that he does. He doesn't always do something. He just stands there. Mario's idle animation in Mario 64 in a snow level is kind of cool. Where he, like, just blows on his hands and rubs his hands trying to keep warm because it's so cold. So, that's kind of
I know in Odyssey, he'll eventually fall asleep and a region-specific bird will perch on his nose.
Really? Huh. I've not tried that. All right, well, sorry we don't have better answers for you, Scruffy, but, you know, hopefully we had a few decent ones. Let's move on to the standard Q&A. First question comes from JCJ. If the Archie Sonic comic wasn't canceled, how many issues would it have gone for, and how would it have ended, and would it include events mentioned in the Mobius 25 storyline?
Who knows how long it would have gone on? It would have gone on as long as it was allowed to. I had plotted things out to number 300 and number 100 in universe, respectively, and a little bit beyond. And had it just kept rolling, you know, 325, 400, 5,000, it was not scheduled to end in any shape or form. The narrative was going to keep going on and on and on. It would never have caught up to the 25 or 30 years later storylines, though, because of restrictions and the fact that they were an alternate timeline anyway. So it's one of the struggles of maintaining a licensed book is that you have to create the illusion of progression.
Yeah.
Because even with the IDW book now, Sonic's never going to age. There's never going to be a happily ever after or a final resolution. In some shape or form, he's always going to be fighting Dr. Eggman. Same thing with the games. That's the perpetuation of the brand. That's just how it is. Mario's never going to finally stop Bowser. There's always going to be something attacking the Lylat system. Kirby is going to find a new Eldritch Horror to consume. It's always going to that way. So it's not like the Archie book was stopped from ever reaching its culmination. It just didn't quite meet the final milestone issues, unfortunately.
Yeah. Still a bit of a shame. All right. Next one comes from the Sketchy Man. Ian, have you ever considered making a sort of Lost Hedgehog Tales for the Mega Man Archie comic series? Is something keeping you from making it, like hope of a successor?
That's part of it. You never know when something might come along to start it up again, because unlike Sonic, I was the only writer for Mega Man that had a very clear beginning and end and production team. And it was so tightly connected to the source material that there isn't a ton of outside stuff that would have to be contended with legally, even though I think technically Capcom owns everything. I'm not sure. Another aspect of it is there isn't a lot to say. Like with Lost Hedgehog Tales, I had things planned out a lot for Volume 1 and a lot for Volume 2 and stuff that had been canceled a long way for both. So that's a lot of stuff to talk about. With Mega Man, I had a few ideas there, but if you played through the Mega Man games, you already know where the story's going. I mean, I guess there's the details of how I would have tried to connect things, but that's not really something I feel comfortable saying, oh yes, I would have definitely done this, because it was so far down the line, it would be how I maybe pitched it to Capcom, but there's no guarantee that would have ever been approved.
Right.
Like how I would have addressed the Star Droids you know, I've got an idea of how it would have happened, but that never went before an editor at Archie or anyone at Capcom. So at that point, it's just fan fiction, and it isn't really illuminating anything about the series. I mean, the most I could talk about was what I wanted to do with Mr. X, Madam Y, and Waltz, but that's maybe like a tell-all paragraph. That's not really project size.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from Brad H. What's going on with Cream the Rabbit and Cheese? They vanished since, and including Sonic Forces, and the comic doesn't seem to address this. Not even Blaze seems concerned by Cream's absence after the events of the war she missed. Then they appeared on the cover of number 9, only to be completely missing from the book and any issue after. I'm confused and concerned. Have they been mandated again? Why is Cream always being given the short end of the stick?
Well, as you will have seen by now, we solicited Sonic number 16, in which Cream does return, along with Cheese, along with Gimmeral, and two other unspecified game characters. Don't get too excited. They're not like title characters. It's a technicality. I'm teasing. It's a knowing smile. I know Cream has some very vocal fans, and there's nothing wrong with Cream. I actually have been converted to the side of Cream. I think she's a great support character to Amy. They're a great duo, very much like Sonic and Tails.
Yeah.
But in terms of importance to the franchise, she isn't way up there. That's just a fact. I'm sorry for the folks that are not happy with that answer, but that's all I can say. The issue with the cover with number 9, I can't really get into, but it's not like she has been actively overlooked or suppressed. It's that she's a non-combatant for the most part. I mean, she's a pacifist first and foremost, and just she hasn't been utilized. And she will be in season 2 of the book. We've got, again, she's debuting in number 16, and she will definitely be showing up in ways afterwards, he said, not put too fine a bit on it, hashtag knowing smile. But and I can't really speak to Sega's mindset on it, but it's not like her not being brought up by Blaze was supposed to be a slight or significant or anything. It's that, you know, they were in the middle of a large battle and that didn't come up. It right. wasn't pertinent to that particular scene. So she's safe, she's fine, she'll be showing up in the book. Who knows what will happen with the games? I don't know. But that's your answer. Sorry if it wasn't what you wanted to hear.
Well, at least she's going to be in the book soon. That's why I went with this question.
Because... And it's not like it's a minor cameo either. It's kind of like the Cream and Gimmeral issue, put it that way.
Nice. All right. Yeah, that's why I went with this question. It's like, well, you know what? Here, we have an answer now. So here we go. You're going to get... Cream is going to be showing up in the comics very soon. She has not been mandated. I don't think she's been dated at all. She's a little young for that.
Yoo-hoo.
Next question comes from Zerik Studios. Which member of the Coconut Crew was it that Null absorbed in the unreleased Archie Sonic issue that focused on Bunny? Was it Gardon? And is there any possibility of him and Cortez showing up in IDW, seeing as they were never actually used in Archie?
I'm surprised how much information from that story got out, considering the issue wasn't even fully drawn when the plug got pulled. But I don't remember. It probably was Gardon, because of all the Coconut Crew, he had the most importance narratively, and that's really being generous. No, probably not, because what I had in mind for that thing has too many parallels to other stuff I've got going on. Gardon, probably. I mean, he's technically part of the extended cast. So if we ever go back to Blaze's world, I'm sure he'll show up somewhere. I mean, he's kind of a royal figure, loosely speaking, and Blaze always needs someone to play off of. Cortez was specifically designed to be built around Antoine's new backstory and a direction we were going with his character. And since Antoine is not in the book, obviously, Cortez has literally no purpose for the IDW. I mean, yeah, I could probably retool him, but at that point, he's a new character, so why bother?
The Coconut Crew, they fire in spurts. If they shoot you, it's going to hurt.
Stop it.
I'm sorry. Every time I see Coconut Crew, I cannot. I literally cannot unhear the DK rap. I cannot. I can't. It's a horrible thing, Ian. My brain is a horrible place to be. Please don't. Please don't join me in here. I resist it myself,
I have to admit.
I don't recommend it. And finally, last question comes from Bebble Blast. I recently noticed that Tangle's age has been confirmed as 15. Do the others have ages yet? Whisper, Rough, Tumble, Dr. Starline?
Not officially, but you can assume they're in that general range. Most Sasana characters are in the 15 to 20-year-old bracket. Mm. So they probably fall in that range.
How old is Eggman?
Eggman was given as in 40s, and then that's been redacted. So I think he's just old at this point.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's a mean thing to say about people in their 40s. You're old.
I think somebody finally realized that saying that Eggman looked up to his grandfather, who died 50 years ago, paints a very specific window of how old he could be.
Uh-huh.
Or it raises some questions since Gerald died in infamy. Unless young Eggman looked up to his infamous crazy grandfather, which I guess that could work too. So,
well,
maybe I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be.
Infamous crazy grandfather is a pretty good description of Eggman.
Yeah, all right. So never mind. Never mind me.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast.
Kyle, where can they find you when this is all over?
You can head on over to Twitter at KyleJCRB, or you can head on over to KNGI.org where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast and my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which you can also find streaming live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up on episode number 350 of that show.
Goodness gracious.
Pretty silly. Pretty crazy. And silly. It's very silly. 350 episodes. What am I doing with my time, Ian? It's crazy.
Providing the people with entertainment.
I've been doing the show since 2003. I've been doing the show since before the term podcast was even coined.
Pioneering the internet.
Which I looked it up. I had to double check. And it's like, yeah, well, podcast came about, the term podcast, I believe, came about in around late 2003, and I started the show in early 2003. So I was doing a podcast before it was cool to be doing podcasts, and I didn't have hosting for older episodes back then, so you couldn't even like listen to them in podcast form at the time. But, you know, it was a thing. It was a thing.
Blazing a trail.
All right, Ian, where can people find you?
Head over to BumbleKing.com. That has my entire body of work, a calendar that shows you when my newest stuff is coming out, news, updates, con appearances, all that happy hoopla. Or head over to Ian Flynn BKC on Twitter, where I occasionally troll people or post goofy things or run polls.
I like when you do the trolling. You should do that more often. Trolling is fun. Don't forget, you can also follow the show on Twitter at Bumblecast, where you can also ask your Q&A questions. And you can also email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
You can support us by heading over to the Bumble Store. That's shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore. We just updated recently with a bunch of new visuals that you can plaster upon all sorts of apparel and accoutrements. So you can get my face, you get Kyle's face, you get both our faces, you can get the logo, you can get all sorts of stuff that's Bumblecast related, and it can be yours.
I feel very weird about somebody putting my face on themselves, and yet at the same time, it's kind of cool. So, you know, go for it. Have fun.
You can catch our live streams every Sunday night if you're a patron around 10 o'clock, or we also stream occasionally on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming.
All right. And, hey, Ian, give a shout out to all those lovely supporters over at Patreon who help us out and keep the show going.
I shall do so. Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex B., Mike B., Saturn Flicky, Duas Diz Din, Scruffy Mad, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., David C., Reverend the Light, Lisa M., Samuel P., Sam Cybercat, Digama F., Wow, Dragon Superfan, AE Double, Brody M., Neil H., Justin G., Dan M. S., Adam T., Silly String, DeCaro, Lee H. K., Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, Tuckle L., Gato Comics, John M., James K, Adam BT, Papadripodopoulos, Overthinking Films, and Ron.
Nice.
I thought I almost had it.
You were almost there. But hey, you know what? One breath. You got pretty far. You got pretty far on one breath, so I'm impressed. It's kind of interesting that I actually went through recently and did not realize how many Patreon supporters we've had since we started the Patreon, current and former patrons. And if you have been a supporter of the show, or you currently are a supporter of the show, thank you very much. I was like really surprised when I went through the list and was like, wow, I didn't realize just how many people, because I, you know, every time we do this show, we hear a lot of the same names. So I keep thinking like, oh yeah, we have a pretty steady list of patrons, but, and we do, we have a very steady list of patrons, but we've also had quite a few that have, you know, come and gone previously. And I am always like floored at how many people have supported us. So thank you all very much.
Yes, thank you very much, not only for your continued patronage, but just for sticking around. You make us feel like we're important or something, that you like us. I don't know why I'm lapsing into this accent. Maybe it's all the Canadian folksiness up here, which I know.
Too many Canadians, eh? Too many Canadians up there, eh? What's that all about?
Where else they gonna go? Mexico? Then they be Mexicans. Mexicanadians.
Mexicanadians? That sounds weird.
Can't really imagine what that accent would be like. That's gonna be the show! Good night, everybody!
I don't know, Ian. People do weird things. They're very strange. I don't understand people. Have you figured out people yet?
Only that there is nothing to figure out.
Oh.
People are just weird.
Okay.
Leave them be. They don't taste good. That's a lie. They taste delicious, but don't eat them because that's taboo.
Oh. How do you know they taste delicious?
If you don't taste testimonies.
If you have not eaten them, how do you know?
Look, if like everyone who's ever had people says they taste good, I'm just going to assume that they're right. I'm not going to test it myself.
I've not talked to a person who says that people taste good. Who are these people you're talking to?
It's a running thing. It, like Pirates of the Caribbean, they say that, you know, the natives that serve delicious long pork. It ain't pork. It's
Ian, that's a movie. That's not real.
Anthropologists who have
that's not real.
Studied these cannibal tribes and have made tofu so that they can partake in the rituals without actually partaking in the rituals, and they gotta judge it by something.
Mmm. Yeah, I'm confused. I don't get it. I don't understand, Ian. I'm lost. I think you're... Something's wrong. Anyway.
We retain sugars and salts. We're a highly fatty species. We're delicious, all right? We are the snack food of the gaiju.
Okay. I believe you, okay? Does that help?
I think you're just placating me, but I'll run with it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org.
This
whoa, hey, whoa, robot-y. Hey, whoa. Ian is becoming a robot. That's the announcement.
So did you.
Congratulations, Ian. You are now a robot. That's the announcement. Sorry, that's not the announcement. Let's go ahead and not have that in the episode, maybe.
Yeah. I have a feeling we're going to be hitting a lot of these potholes. Oh, well.
That's okay.